Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Following an electoral campaign in which Tunisians were stunned by economic difficulty, polling station opened their doors today to enable millions of Tunisians to elect their new president.
Tunisians are deciding to re-elect incumbent President Kais Saied as he seeks a second-term mandate on Sunday.
What the petition is saying is that as Minister of Education, she is supposed to be accountable and answerable to the people of Uganda through their elected representatives. The moment you are holding the portfolio of minister, then you must appear before parliament.
A Ugandan lawyer petitions the Constitutional Court, saying the appointment and promotion of the son of the president is illegal.
So the people are talking about the cost of life and about the corruptions. So the corruptions have a very big impact in the life of the people.
And voters in Mozambique go to the polls this week to choose a new president and legislature. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Tunisia, citizens are deciding to re-elect incumbent President Kais Saied as he seeks a second-term mandate on Sunday. But critics are expressing concern the presidential contest may not be credible after the president's main rival, Ayachi Zamel, was jailed last month. President Saied also faces a challenge from Zohair Magzoui, a former ally who is now an avowed critic from the opposition Char Party. For the latest development, I reach Noura Hefaid. She is a journalist in the Tunisian capital, Tunis.
Following an electoral campaign in which Tunisians were stunned by economic difficulty, polling station opened their doors today to enable millions of Tunisians to elect their new president from among three candidates led by the outgoing President Kais Saied, accused of dictatorial draft. He is competing with Zohair Al-Maghzawi. And Zohair Maghzawi, he is a supporter with Saied. And Ayachi Zamel, who is imprisoned on charges of foreign endorsements. Voting being at 8 in the morning today and will continue until 6 in the various governorates of the Tunisian Republic. The number of voters registered in the electoral register is estimated, according to the Electoral Commission, at 9,753,217 voters.
When you went to the polls, how were people voting?
Yeah, the people should going to the station of election and do this vote normally.
Has the Electoral Commission said when the results will be trickling in?
Yeah, results are expected to start appearing in the next few hours. As for the announcement of the final results, and the winner, it is likely that it will be on Wednesday or maybe before.
About 3 days ago, some protesters went in the streets demonstrating about some opposition leaders who are being held, and they are saying the elections will not be free, fair, and transparent. Are their concerns legitimate?
It is true that the election campaign witnessed the reluctance due to the people's fears of a new term that would make life and economic situation more difficult for Tunisians. But today we did not notice any actual movements from the opposition or any provocations outside the scope of the normal situation. So we can say that the elections are going on normally so far. On the contrary, yesterday we witnessed celebratory movements from the heart of the capital in support of Kais Saied, candidate number 3, and most of them were from young people.
Some people are asking whether the elections will be free, fair, and credible. What are people telling you about the credibility of the election?
To be honest, there are citizens who say that the election results seem to be decided in favor of the outgoing president. And in this case, they do not have to perform their electoral duty. But others say that they are going to vote so that the ballot box does not remain empty.
Noura Hefayed is a journalist in Tunisia. She spoke with me from the capital, Tunis. The EU's top court on Friday ruled in favor of a Western Sahara independence movement. Its decision confirmed an earlier verdict that cancelled trade deals allowing Morocco to export fish and farm products to the bloc from the disputed region. While the fish agreement has expired, the deal on agricultural products in the meantime is still alive. According to the French news agency AFP, the court said that the protocol should stay in place for another 12 months in view of the serious negative consequences which its immediate annulment would entail for the external action of the European Union. The Court of Justice of the European Union rejected all appeals against its 2021 decision in the case brought by the Polisario Front. For reaction to the court's ruling, I spoke with Mouloud Saïd. He is the representative of the Polisario Front in Washington, D.C.
So this is just to reaffirm once more the legitimacy of the Sahrawi struggle and that the Moroccan presence in the Western Sahara is one of occupation. And this is a good response to those that they have been advocating for a Moroccan solution that calls for an autonomy against the international law without the consent of the people of the Western Sahara. So this is a big victory for the Sahrawi people and also a victory for the international law, and we are very happy for the decision.
What does this decision mean for your group?
For my government, not for a group, but for the Sahrawi government and the Polisario Front, this is a reaffirmation of the right of the people of the Western Sahara, for which we have been fighting for over 50 years now. So for us, this is, it comforts our struggle, it comforts the legitimacy of our struggle, and it, in a clear manner, that the presence of the Western Sahara is a one of occupation. And this, it should be read very clearly. So there is no other court besides this. We already have the International Court of Justice. We have the UN position on Western Sahara, and now the European Court reaffirmed the right of the people. So there is no grounds for anybody to come up with a solution that does not take into consideration the will of the people of the Western Sahara, and on the basis that Morocco is occupying Western Sahara illegally.
Where do you go from here after this decision by the court?
Now there is grounds also for the companies that are investing in the Western Sahara. There is very good grounds to sue all those companies who are illegally exploiting the resources of the Western Sahara.
But is that a decision that the people want?
Definitely, because it has been reaffirmed during the self-determination of the people of Western Sahara. It has been reaffirmed during this very clear ruling. So this is, of course, it helps. What it doesn't help is the Moroccan occupation. It doesn't help those who say that Western Sahara should be under Moroccan sovereignty. And now that is going to be a test for those countries supporting Morocco to see whether they are for the international law or they are for the fait accompli of an illegal occupation.
Mouloud Saïd is the representative of the Polisario Front in Washington, D.C. He spoke with me from Washington.
How do the Africans in the diaspora shape their views on U.S. presidential elections? I am the moderator, Yehiye Suhib, and this is one of the many questions I'll be asking our panelists on VOA's African Diaspora Town Hall event, Wednesday, October 9th at 18:30 UTC.
Djibouti's foreign minister says the country's offer to Ethiopia to gain access to the sea remains on the table. Mahmoud Ali Yusuf says the administration in Djibouti City will continue to engage with both Ethiopia and Somalia to help ease the political tensions between them. His remarks came on the sidelines of the recently concluded UNGA meeting in New York. Foreign Minister Yusuf is also Djibouti's candidate for the chairmanship of the African Union Commission. He faces stiff competition from several member states, including Kenya's former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. In part two of this conversation, Djibouti's Foreign Minister Mahmoud Ali Yusuf talks to me about the prospect of his candidacy and what makes him stand out from his competitors. I understand you are a candidate to the AU chairmanship. Yeah. What is your vision for the African continent, where African leaders to decide that you are the best man for the job?
We have the best framework, rules and regulations, projects and flagship programs, but the implementation rate is very low. Whenever we make decisions, that decision is not implemented. Just to give you an example, the 10-year plan, the first 10-year plan of Agenda 2063 has only 30%, 37% of implementation rate. Then we move to the second 10-year plan. So you see, if we cannot, you know, implement the decisions that we make at the highest level, I think the whole future of the organization could be jeopardized. So my mission, if I am elected, is to make sure that the implementation processes are well under control and we can reach a level of performance that is not less than 80%. So that's my promise. Number two, I will focus on a number of priorities, peace and security. So we have a flagship program called, you know, Silencing the Guns. We have been trying to reach our goals by 2020. We failed. Now we extended this program to 2030. So that will be one of, because these are, you know, the lack of stability, crisis and wars, you know, are the main hurdle or the main obstacle that hinder, you know, the integration process. If we want to create the conditions for the Africa we want, integrated, peaceful and prosperous, we need to resolve the peace and security problems on the continent. The other flagship program will be the movement of Africans from between the African countries. If we don't create, you know, the conditions for that free movement of goods and individuals between countries, how can we talk about trade? How can we create the conditions for the continental free trade area? Then number three, infrastructure. I think we have a lot of programs. One of them is transport, air transport, you know, market. We will be working on that. How we can create, you know, the conducive environment for the promotion of infrastructure. So two or three, you know, priority issues that I would certainly work to focus on so that I can make a difference. I mean, this is my priority and I will work for it.
Mr. Foreign Minister, what realistically are the prospects of your candidacy? Because you have other heavy hitters,
yes,
who are competing with you.
I know they are very competent people, very able sons of Africa, but I am confident. I have been in diplomacy for the past 33 years, foreign minister for the past 20 years. I'm still active, while others are not active. I'm in the business, and I have never stopped to be in the business. That's number one. Second, I know the African Union and the multilateral system better than anyone else. I have been attending the African Union events for the past 25 years. You see, I have accumulated enough experience, and I think that our principals, our leaders, when they will vote on February 2025, they will choose not the individuals, but the future of the organization.
Do you think that makes you uniquely qualified or better placed than the rest?
I am. I can confirm that.
So what's your message to those who will vote to choose who heads the African Union Commission in the next 5 or so years?
I'm just telling them, choose, you know, the best future for the organization. And I think I am this best future for our organization.
Mahmoud Ali Yusuf is Djibouti's foreign minister. He spoke with me from New York. A Ugandan lawyer has petitioned the Constitutional Court, saying The recent appointment and promotion of General Muhoozi Kainerugaba as son of the president is illegal. It comes after Kainerugaba was promoted from lieutenant general to a four-star general in October 2022. Attorney Gawaya Tegule also says First Lady Janet Museveni should be forced to resign as education minister for refusing to answer questions from lawmakers after delegating her deputy ministers to go to the legislature. He also questioned General Salim Saleh, a brother of the president, for his involvement in state affairs. But supporters of the government dismissed the court petition as a publicity stunt. They urged Tegule to find something better to do with his life. End time. Tegule Gawaya tells me that the petition raises key questions that a constitutional court must address.
Well, the petition basically tackles two things. One is the concern that there has been state capture, that the entire machinery of the state is in the hands of a single family, that is the first family. And the structure is amorphous in the sense that if you want anything done in Uganda, if the president says no, or the first lady, or the first son, or the president's younger brother, General Salim Saleh, then nothing is going to happen. And we're saying that it is unconstitutional generally. The other thing is that the entire economy is in the hands of these people.
Gawaya, some people are suggesting that if members of the first family are qualified, nothing precludes them from occupying the positions that any ordinary Ugandan can occupy. Should they be excluded just because they have relations with the president?
First of all, the first lady, we have nothing against her per se. What the petition is saying is that as Minister of Education, she is supposed to be accountable and answerable to the people of Uganda through their elected representatives. The moment you are holding the portfolio of minister, then you must appear before parliament, respond to questions, give account of what you have done or not done, tell us how you spent the money that was entrusted to you, tell us how you discharged the responsibility that has been entrusted unto you by the people of Uganda. Now, she has refused to appear before parliament. She always delegates her junior ministers to appear before parliament. And we're saying, if you cannot appear before parliament, then resign.
What do you think are the prospects of this case? Because on one hand, opposition and even some lawyers have criticized the judiciary of being biased. So how do you then go to this same system that you claim to be biased, that you will be successful if you present this petition to the court?
Two things here. Number one, when it is a constitutional petition, I'll tell you what our former president, Idi Amin, told Uganda's boxers when they were accusing the referees at international tournaments of being biased against them as black people. He said, what you do when you go to the ring, knock out the opponent. And then no ref is going to say the other side won because it's a knockout. Now, there are provisions which are manifestly clear that even the court cannot do anything against them. And I can tell you that not even the constitutional court, as the law stands today, is able to declare that Mrs. Museveni, by refusing to appear before parliament, is actually constitutional. That one, the hands of the court are tied. On that one, they can do absolutely nothing. I can also tell you that when we say that the promotion of Mr. Museveni's son, General Muhoozi, from lieutenant general to general at a time when he was underperforming, and then you promote him from lieutenant general to general, that is illegal and unprofessional. It's unconstitutional. There is nothing the court will do about that one because it is open for all to see.
People are questioning the timing. Why now?
I can tell you, Peter, first of all, these petitions take a lot of time and resources to put together. It's not a one-day thing. It's a process that you have to work on patiently. And as individuals, many of us who are activists do not have the resources to get as many cases to the constitutional court as would have required. So the resources needed sometimes dictate how quickly you're going to move the constitutional court.
Gawaya Tegule is a Ugandan lawyer. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Voters in Mozambique go to the polls this week to choose a new president and legislature. According to analysts, ruling Frelimo Party candidate Daniel Chapo is expected to win the presidential contest to replace outgoing President Philippe Nyusi. He is, however, likely to face stiff competition from independent candidate Venancio Mondlane, as well as Usofe Momade of the former rebel Renamo Party and Lutero Simango of the Mozambique Democratic Movement. Desio Alfazima is a political analyst based in the Mozambican capital, Maputo. He tells me that voters want the next leader to address key issues facing the country, such as insecurity, corruption, and climate change.
So the people are talking about the cost of life and about the corruptions. So the corruptions have a very big impact in the life of the people. Because of the corruptions, the capacity of the states are reducing to combat the crime, and also are reducing the capacity of the state to promote investment in education, in health, in agriculture, energy, and other issues. So the corruptions have very big and very negative influence for the situation of the country. But also, we have a very big problem in terms of the kidnap and the terrorism. So these two or other issues have a big impact in the life of the people in Mozambique.
Desio, so the people that you have spoken with in Mozambique, are they identifying some of the presidential candidates as having solutions to solving these major problems that they face?
Yes, so we have four presidential candidates, and all the presidential candidates are receiving the support of the people. So, but most of them believe that Frelimo candidate, Daniel Chapo, that is more young candidate, some of the people believe that he has capacity, and also they understand that the Frelimo have a responsibility in our country and have a responsibility to solve this problem. But the other parts of the populations believe that Venancio Mondlane is a Podemos candidate, is other very good options. And he also is very popular in the around the young people. And most of them believe that is a good candidate that can contribute to bring the solution of this problem.
This is what I'm hearing, that due to the dominance of the Frelimo Party, they think that Daniel Chapo, a former radio announcer and law lecturer, is more tipped to win since he enjoys the power of the incumbency of the ruling party. Others are saying it's going to be a competitive election. But what is your take on how competitive this election, presidential election, is going to be?
Yeah, it will be competitive, and I believe that the level of the participations will be high. But in terms of the final results, for me, it will not change. So for me, Frelimo and Daniel Chapo will win and will take a majority, and also the Renamo and the Usuf Momadi is the more bigger political parties in Mozambique. I think that will continue in the second.
Are people confident that the Electoral Commission will organize free, fair, transparent, and credible elections?
So this is a big challenge. So now, this year, is special that because we are completing 30 years of the electoral democracy. So we organized our first election in 1994. So we have until now with very big challenge related to the quality of the process and the result of which have often been every time questioned. So I don't know how will be this year, but I think that the things will not change too much. But we have this big challenge in terms of the quality of our elections.
Desu Alfazima is a political analyst in Mozambique. He spoke with me from the capital, Maputo. Botswana's High Court has confirmed four presidential candidates will run in the country's general elections next month. Among the contestants is incumbent President Mokgweetsi Masisi, who is seeking a second and final term. For VOA, Nkodisi Dube reports from the Botswana capital, Habaroni.
By law, presidential candidates in Botswana must provide proof to the Chief Justice they have the required number of supporters to be eligible to run. The High Court verified 4 out of 5 possible candidates had the required support. Chief Justice Terence Ranowane said President Masisi, leader of the opposition coalition Umbrella for Democratic Change, UDC, Dumaboko, Dumelang Salishando of the Botswana Congress Party, BCP, and Mipato Riatile from the Botswana Patriotic Front, BPF, will be the presidential candidates. Biki Butale, from a smaller opposition group, the Botswana Republican Party, failed to meet the requirements. President Masisi addressed party supporters outside the High Court, said Monday that he's confident of victory. He says, we have completed the nomination process inside the High Court. We are all equal before the law, but politically we are more superior to them. Let us now go out and show them that we are bigger than them. UDC President Dumaboko told reporters at the end of the nomination process his party will not stand for a rigged election. In 2019, Boko and his party claimed the ruling BDP stole the election. He says, if the election is free and fair, we will accept the outcome. But if things do not go well like what happened in 2019, we will reject the results. He says, we warn those organizing the election that they should not attempt to rig the election. We urge every voter who is committed to a democratic process to be on guard and ensure that there are no irregularities. The UDC enters the October 30 polls without the BCP party, which quit the coalition last year, citing differences in the opposition alliance. BCP spokesperson Mpo Peko says the party is well organized heading into the country's 13th general election.
For the BCP, 2024 presents the best opportunity to change government in Botswana. So completing this nomination process presents a lot of excitement and a lot of hope. Hope that Botswana have heard our message. We were the first party to complete the manifesto, to complete the primary election process, to complete the nomination process. So we hope that Botswana can see that this is a party that is very serious about them as a people.
She used the phrase Botswana, which collectively refers to all the citizens of Botswana. The president is elected indirectly by parliament in Botswana, with recent efforts to introduce direct voting rejected following nationwide consultations. Nkodisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni, Botswana.
U.S. President Joe Biden on Friday urged Israel to consider other alternatives to striking Iranian oil facilities and said Israel has not yet concluded how to respond to Tehran's missile attacks. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wydakuswara has this report on the latest tension in the Middle East.
A series of Israeli airstrikes target Iran-backed Hezbollah in the southern suburbs of the Lebanese capital Beirut Friday as Israeli troops push inside southern Lebanon. Israel is also weighing its retaliation options for Tehran's 180 missile attack earlier this week, including whether to attack Iranian oil facilities.
The Israelis have not concluded what they're going to do in terms of a strike. That's under discussion. I think if I were in their shoes, I'd be thinking about other alternatives.
That was President Joe Biden in a surprise appearance at the White House briefing room Friday, the first in his almost 4 years in office. Biden said earlier this week that he didn't support Israel targeting Iranian nuclear sites. The Iranian oil industry is mostly sanctioned, and an attack on its facilities would have little impact on global supply. But Tehran's retaliation still could be disruptive. Ellen Lipson is the director of the International Security Program Center for Security Policy Studies at George Mason University.
If Iran then were to retaliate by blocking the Strait of Hormuz, it would affect not only Iranian oil exports, but the oil exports of many of the Gulf countries, the Gulf Arab countries. So that could be catastrophic for world energy supplies.
Since Hamas' October 7th attack that triggered Israel's war against the militant group in Gaza, Biden has struggled to contain the conflict. It has now spread not only to Lebanon, but also the West Bank, where an Israeli airstrike at the refugee camp Friday killed 18 Palestinians, the deadliest attack in the Israeli-occupied territory since the start of the Gaza war. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has not heeded Biden's calls for a ceasefire in Gaza or Lebanon. Ending the war is a key issue for Americans ahead of the November presidential election.
No administration has helped Israel more than I have. None. 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 And I think Bibi should remember that. And whether he's trying to influence the election or not, I don't know, but I'm not counting on that.
In a show of support to Hezbollah, Iran's top diplomat delivered this warning in Beirut just hours after Israel's airstrikes. Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi.
If the Israeli entity takes any step or measure against us, our retaliation will be stronger than the previous one.
Meanwhile, to deter further escalation, the U.S. military Friday struck military sites in Yemen to target the Houthis, another Iranian-backed proxy that has attacked shipping lanes in the Red Sea. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Joner, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. But first, now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Joner, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Joner.
Good evening, Africa. The two last speakers on the general debate of the General Assembly were two permanent members, the British Prime Minister and the foreign minister of Russia, Lavrov, who was deputizing for the Russian president. It is really regrettable because what they said really were very, very, very important. But let me focus solely on one thing which is of immense interest and concern for Africa. Both of them specifically mentioned states that they believe should be given the permanent status in the Security Council. But what was very interesting and may cause problems for Africa is that Foreign Minister Lavrov did state what many thought was possible. Russia is still supporting permanent seat for Africa, and also for Latin America, and also for Asia. But the big surprise was that he disclosed what some of us have known for a long time through private consultation. He said that Russia would not support any additional permanent member for the Western Alliance, because in his view, they already have a majority in the Security Council, which means you're talking about United Kingdom, France, and the United States. So they have three of the five permanent seats. And he said Russia would not accept an additional permanent seat for the Western Alliance. This is going to raise a lot of problems in any discussion on a global agreement by the five permanent members about additional permanent seats. Also, when specific nations were mentioned, they opened a Pandora's box, something which in 1996, 1997, and 1998 were discussed in detail by the so-called Coffee Club. It's a very difficult matter to resolve. Let me explain what I'm saying. When it comes to Africa, almost all members have said, yes, we agree that Africa should have permanent seats in the Security Council. Of course, whether or not it's going to be a second-class permanent seat is another matter. But all African speakers stated clearly that they would not accept a second-grade permanent seat. They want permanent seats with all the responsibility given to the existing five permanent seats. And you can also see the problem that Latin America would have if already specific members have been mentioned. For example, Brazil was mentioned as the state in Latin America that should have a permanent seat. But I can tell you that when we were discussing these things earlier, Mexico and Argentina raised concern because they said if Brazil is the permanent member, then no Spanish-speaking member will permanency, since Brazil is a Lusophone-speaking country. Similarly, when you turn to Asia, when mention is made of India as the state that should be given the permanent seat, we run into a problem with Pakistan, who has said they would lobby against that because in Pakistan's judgment, India has violated the General Assembly resolution on the problem of Kashmir. And recently, Pakistan was saying that the current Prime Minister of India has become a leader in the states that have Islamic phobia. Thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. Like she do me Karashika, yeah. Make I no feel him, yeah. Me way be John Cena, yeah. I say I swear you might die. Baby girl now you be got design. My life as your face they show, that's all your shoes they shine. Now you go be my wife, you got to be my man. For you I paid the price, yeah, yeah, yeah.
From my life, now you are true. I don't wonder if you ever can approve. If I do you wrong, my baby boo, I'm sorry. You say I get too many girls that find a story. But now you did my mind, I swear, say now you did my mind. I swear I know the lie, I dream about you all the time. Cause girl, you blow my mind, and I know fit tonight. But girl, you do me bad. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, G, oh, yeah, G, come on. In your love is all I do for the living. I tempted to touch your foreign booty. If I kill him all, stick in love like that. Booty full of love for back. Hey, oh baby, this love is real. I give you all my body, I will be sure. Turn up like Oba, boy, I come and shine. Yeah, you forgot that, but I don't say you like her. Oh, get you, come on.
Take this time to get out. Leave confirmation. beaucoup de moulins, mais c'est pas du gâteau. Y avait beaucoup de douleurs, mais c'était pas un cadeau. Là où y a le cœur, la raison ne parle pas. Il voyait ailleurs, tu ne voyais que lui. Ah, tout le temps, et ça t'a supporté. Ah, et pourtant, je t'avais bien parlé. Le mène par le bout du nez. Et quand elle dit bébé, il se sent rajeuni. Des fois il trime, ah, il trime, ah, il trime juste pour un bisou. L'ado le plume, elle veut un film. Elle voyage avec son esprit. Là où il y a le cœur, la raison ne parle pas. Elle voyait ailleurs, lui il ne voyait qu'elle a tout le temps. Et ça t'a supporté, ah, et pourtant je t'aime.
Usiende mbali nami,
wendo tulizo la moyo.
Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer the great Justin Thwaites, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a fish with its mouth shut avoids the hook. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
We are amazed of what you are doing. Not what you are doing, but that is touching all of us. Because you beautify our place. That means you give us shelter, you give us food. You are giving us a free movement. That's a wheelchair. Look, you've done more than enough. We want to sincerely say that you will never be erased in our hearts.